This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we look at some key issues that affect UK students, the UK campus, and the Lexington community. Campus Voices is created by Journalism 304 students with the help of the journalism faculty. Please send any questions to news@wrfl.fm.
Good evening and welcome to Campus Voices, a program where we take a look at what's going on in Lexington and around the UK campus community. I'm your host, Maggie Davis, and today we will be discussing the government shutdown. It began on December 22, 2018, and came to an end on January 25, 2019. A government shutdown is when non-essential discretionary federal programs close. It occurs when Congress fails to appropriate funds. In the normal budget process, Congress appropriates funds by September for the following fiscal year. If an agreement cannot be made, however, then a congressional funding resolution may be passed. A continuing resolution is a type of appropriations legislation. An appropriations bill is a bill that gives to or sets aside money to specific federal government program departments, agencies, and programs. The money provides funding for operations, personnel, equipment, and activities. In United States history, there have been 21 government shutdowns, but according to the Congressional Research Service, the most recent government shutdown was the longest of them all. WRFL reporter Brett Alpa reports on the history of government shutdowns and the reasoning behind why there was a disagreement over the most recent budget. Well, tonight in the studio, we're going to hear from University of Kentucky political science professor Dr. Stephen Voss. And although we didn't get that insight, he's here to provide us with that. His research interests include voting behavior, political methodology, racial and ethnic politics, and migration politics. Dr. Voss has also served as a media commentator covering Kentucky politics. Thank you so much for being here with us tonight, Dr. Voss. Of course. So like we just heard, or like we were thinking about discussing today, this recent government shutdown was one of the longest in history. We often hear this term partial government shutdown being thrown around. In this context, what does partial mean?
Well, I think what you're referring to is how some government employees keep going to work. Some of them, you know, just normally, and then some go to work without being paid. That means that the basic protections that we enjoy, the services that if they stop, the government would grind to a halt, they continue. But all the other, I hate to call them non-essential, but all the other federal workers are furloughed and they go home and wait for new funding to be passed.
So is it ever the case where there is a complete government shutdown, whereas even those, quote, essential workers are also not currently being employed?
Not unless we have a zombie apocalypse.
Okay, well, that's good to know at least. Well, from early on in his campaign, Donald Trump spoke about immigration and border security. And of course, he's been very vocal about his desire for that border wall on the southern border and funding it. So, of course, that was a big part of his campaign. And it was a big reason for this most recent government shutdown. Were you surprised at all that controversial topic sort of led to this shutdown?
Donald Trump's been willing to sort of break all the rules, all the conventions, and this is no exception. With the other recent government shutdowns, usually they were over major issues of taxing and spending policy, and it really was a clash over the budget that held up the budget. This case is unique in that the clash was really over one specific type of expenditure, this border wall.
Okay, interesting. Well, despite that conflict over the wall and the fact that he's really pushing that one specific issue, his approval ratings are currently at 52%, which is the highest they've been since shortly after his inauguration. During the shutdown, they did drop a little bit. They got down to 43%. But like I just said, now they're back up in the 50s. Why is there that sudden jump after the shutdown is finally over?
Yeah, I'm not sure whose numbers you have, but there are several presidential approval or disapproval timelines, and they all show basically the same thing. Most of the cost that Trump paid in terms of public opinion for the shutdown has evaporated very quickly. Why that happened, it's really hard to say. We don't understand the ups and downs of presidential approval that well. But for sure, the public has a short attention span. And when a problem's solved, they'll often move on to evaluate presidents or the government based on something new. In that sense, it's not surprising that it would be short-lived.
So, like we said earlier, you do study voting patterns. Do shutdowns typically affect a president's chance or any government official's chance of re-election, or does that short attention span sort of lead to forgive and forget when it comes to be election time?
You know, the thing about the government shutdown, aside from the government workers affected or people who really were relying on, say, a small business loan, for most people, it's just an abstraction. And they're able to deal with this headline they see about government shutdown according to their partisanship. And Republicans can mostly blame the Democrats or at least excuse their side. The Democrats can do the reverse. And the effects basically dissipate. They go away. One thing that was weird about this one is Republicans were relatively likely to blame Trump for the shutdown. And we know that, but digging down to which Republicans and what they did with it, we really don't know. I mean, Donald Trump kind of at first wanted to own the shutdown and say, "You're darn right, I'm taking a shutdown to get right. that wall." So some of the Republicans who said Trump was responsible may not have meant it in a bad way, right? So we don't know how to take that. Others may just be those sort of more mainstream or moderate Republicans who haven't liked Trump for a while, and this is just another reason not to like him.
Right. So you talked a little bit there at the beginning about the individual consequences on small business owners and stuff like that. But from a national scale, what would the economic effect or the economic impact be of a partial shutdown like this one?
So the research on previous shutdowns suggests that the impact was very short-lived as well, not just the public opinion impact, that basically the economy recovered. You saw things slow down a little bit while the government workers weren't being paid and therefore weren't spending money. But then, I don't know if you know this and you didn't say it, those workers do get paid once the government reopens. They're not like permanently out of
right.
this money. So any family expenditures they put off, they can make later.
Right.
And then the money
back.
Gets pumped into the economy a couple of months later and it balances out. To the extent there's permanent impact, it's things that say maybe those government workers would have bought and they didn't. And when they get the windfall of the back pay, they still don't buy.
Right.
And there are certain types of businesses could be affected. So if you're running a deli that government workers like to go to, a restaurant mm-hmm. that government workers like to go to in D.C., well, they're not going to come by and buy two meals, you know, after
right.
they get paid.
But if they wanted an iPhone, they still want an iPhone now, and now they have
right, that kind of thing could get paid. And, you know, it's not clear that what government workers do if they have to wait for their money in a while and then get it all at once is worse for the economy than what they would have done. I mean, maybe they pay off credit card debt, you know, when they
right.
get the windfall, and otherwise they would have just blown it.
Right.
Who can really say? So, you know, the estimates of what the cost of that shutdown would have varied. Most people believe it's at least a little bad, that other things equal, you don't want a government shutdown. But it matters less in terms of the immediate economic impact than the effect it can have psychically on people. In other words, if consumer confidence gets worried by the uncertainty that it caused, if businesses decide, "Oh, I don't trust this government to get its affairs in order, I'm maybe not going to open that factory, I'm maybe not going to take on those extra employees," those things that we don't get to measure when we try to figure out the economic impact of a shutdown, that's likely to, or could be much more damaging than any direct effect of those folks not being paid for a
while. Right. So it's seeing that scary headline on the news, government shutdown, is what kind of creates that panic, at least in the short term.
Right. So much of the economic conditions we actually experience, are caused by perceptions. You know, do people trust the government to buy its bonds? Do foreigners trust the dollar enough that they want dollars and therefore the purchasing power of our dollars goes up? It's a whole lot of it's just perception. It's trust.
Right. Well, like we talked about earlier, immigration and border security were two of President Trump's main campaign promises during his 2016 presidential bid. WRFL reporter Al Smith reports on one of Trump's political slogans that was used frequently throughout his campaign.
"Build the wall" is the American political slogan that President Donald Trump coined during his 2016 presidential run. It was a phrase that called for the construction of a much larger and fortified border wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. The wall would be designed to prevent people from entering the United States illegally. President Trump claims there's a crisis with the number of people attempting to cross the border illegally in the past few years. According to the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, in 2017, border crossing apprehensions were at their lowest since 1971. Undetected illegal border crossings have dropped as well, from 851,000 to approximately 62,000, according to estimates by the Department of Homeland Security. But there is one group trying to cross that is on the rise: migrant families. In November 2018, 25,172 families attempted to cross the border. For WRFL News, I'm Elle Smith.
So we just heard some background on the wall and the slogan behind it and sort of the impact that that might have had on Trump's campaign. Obviously, his supporters rallied behind it, and of course, he ended up being elected. But how much of an impact do you think a simple slogan like Build the Wall could really have on an election?
So a slogan like Build the Wall is useful because of branding, because it's memorable, something you can chant. It's helpful in that way. In a way, it's doubly helpful because it's not clear that a lot of those folks chanting Build the Wall really care that much about whether a wall gets built. It's a statement of a direction of policy, and Build the Wall meant crack down on immigration, especially illegal migration across the border, and it stood for that. And a lot of those folks, if they don't get their wall, but they get 4 years of a president who's more anti-immigration than the last president, they'll likely be satisfied.
Right. And now, of course, he's sort of continuing with that trend, and he's adjusting it a little bit to finish the wall. Do you expect similar results from that?
Well, that's not the only way the Trump administration has hedged that sort of ironclad resistance to immigration. Recently, they've been signaling maybe they're more supportive of high-tech migrants, which a lot of technical companies have been asking for, like software companies and the like. You know, let us bring in more foreigners with programming skills or other technical skills because we can't find the workers here. And the Trump administration has softened its tone on that. So, yes, I expect campaign rhetoric, whether they make it clear or not, to get softened when it becomes a matter of public policy. Again, you know, we talked about Trump breaking the rules. If anything, he's broken the rules by trying to stick to some of his more maybe less realistic promises longer than past presidents have.
Right. And that's a super interesting point. Obviously, he made all these campaign promises and then he ended up basically, you know, helping get the government to a shutdown over these promises. Do you think that dedication to really fulfilling those campaign promises is helping his approval ratings with his supporters at all?
He's definitely got high approval ratings with Republicans. I don't know that I'd frame it in terms of keeping campaign promises because most people aren't watching those things that closely. But the sense that he's been what they thought he'd be during the campaign, that's got to help. I mean, sometimes voters are happier with someone who's predictable, even if it's not exactly the policies that they'd want, then they're happy with somebody who's maybe closer to them, but they don't feel like they have a vision, don't feel like they can really pin down who they stand for.
So in that way, Donald Trump maybe is predictable, whereas throughout the last couple of years, he's been sort of seen as this erratic person, but in the context you just put it, he would be predictable.
That's right. He's highly erratic. But in a sense, that's one of the things you might have anticipated from how he campaigned, right? I'm going to go mix things up. And a lot of the voters who supported him claimed that that's what they wanted. They wanted somebody who wouldn't follow business as usual, who basically would break all the conventions of Washington, D.C. And he's given them that. I mean, if that's what you wanted, somebody who would rattle the halls of government, he's been rattling them the whole time.
Right. Well, like you just talked about, the branding behind it, the marketing, keeping those promises and playing into that role, of course, played a big role in Trump's campaign and his eventual election. But when Trump was elected president back in 2016, Republicans controlled both the House and the Senate. But of course, that did switch during the 2018 midterm elections. WRFL reporter Elle Smith has the story on why the most recent midterm elections were so important.
Every 2 years in the United States, U.S. congressional elections take place. A midterm election refers to a type of election where the people can elect their representatives and other subnational office holders, such as a governor or members of local council, in the middle of the term of an executive, for example. The 2018 midterm elections were the first to occur under the presidency of Donald Trump. Republicans and Democrats battled to keep their seats in Congress. The result? A split Congress. Republicans were able to retain control of the Senate, and the Democrats took back the House of Representatives. Why does this matter? Because a split government usually results in potential hurdles for the party of the president. For WRFL Radio, I'm Elle Smith.
Well, like we just heard, midterms did result in a split Congress. Dr. Voss, do you think that that split Congress is really what eventually caused this most recent shutdown?
For sure, having Democrats in charge of the House means that the Republicans need to deal with them. And unlike with most bills, where in the Senate a minority of Democrats can block it, that's a lot harder to do with budgets. Budgets work under different procedures that just a majority can pass a lot of what they want. So for sure, the Democrats are now at the bargaining table, and they can place demands on the White House that they couldn't have if they had been in the minority.
Right. But there have been split Congresses before. Obviously, this isn't the first time that's happened, but yet it did lead to the longest government shutdown in history. Why do you think that could have been?
Yeah. So what's historically, when we have a split Congress or a divided government where Congress is run by one party and the president's run by the other, they can accomplish a lot. And there's one political scientist, a guy named David Mayhew, did some work while he was at Yale University to show that in terms of important legislation, Democrats and Republicans are as likely to pass important legislation as when the government's controlled by one party. But this split government is different. You know, when Ronald Reagan had a split government and he's leading budgetary reform, tax reform, and the like, a lot of the Democrats who were on the other side were moderates. Many of them were from the South, and they could join a conservative coalition with the GOP to give Reagan the bills he wanted. The Democrats who are in Congress now, there are no moderates in the House of Representatives. None. There are almost no moderates in the U.S. Senate. None. It's a very different type of Democratic majority than Ronald Reagan had to deal with a generation ago.
And that polarization, of course, has become a huge issue in this country. Do you see an end to that and sort of a drift back towards the moderates? Or do you think sort of where we are right now on both sides of the aisle, extreme sides of the aisle, is that sort of where we're going to sit for a while?
A lot of structural features of the government and the electoral system have caused this polarization. How we draw districts so that they're lopsided, Democratic or Republicans part of it. Where people live, Republicans and Democrats are more segregated in terms of where they live from each other. You're a lot less likely to live on a street that has Democrats and Republicans than they used to be. And interest groups and the money they pump in to campaigns tend to pull candidates to the extremes. Not a lot of people writing checks for, I'm going to be kind of in the middle and compromise. Okay, that you write checks for I'm going to blow up the White House, or I'm going to destroy the Democratic Party, and that's all those features are there. What's likely to lead to a reversal is other kinds of bad news, a crisis, an economic crisis, a foreign policy crisis. That's what tends to get rid of this sort of stagnation.
And sort of bring the people back together.
Yeah, so we can look forward to a recession or depression or a war or a terrorist attack, something like that.
Oh, great.
That'll
That's
fix
great
our
news.
System.
Well, of course, the government shutdown affected citizens all over the country, no matter if they were Democrats or Republicans, and that even affected citizens right here in Lexington. According to a report from the Senate Appropriations Committee, the government shutdown affected 800,000 workers in the United States. The Lexington Housing Authority is funded by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, which is one of the agencies that was closed during the shutdown. WRFO reporter L. Smith spoke to the executive director of the Lexington Housing Authority, Austin Sims, where they discussed the effects of another possible government shutdown.
According to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, over 5 million families across the U.S. rely on Section 8 housing vouchers to keep a roof over their heads. Austin Sims oversees one of the companies that distributes these vouchers in Lexington.
We oversee about 3,000 vouchers and approximately 1,000 public housing units.
Despite this being the longest government shutdown in history, the Lexington Housing Authority did not feel its effects.
Several months really did not directly affect us. Mm-hmm. It's only if it were long-term. Long-term being somewhat difficult to define, but long-term could end up being catastrophic. Short-term really does not directly affect us or the clients that we serve.
Despite the Lexington Housing Authority not being affected by this most recent government shutdown, they are still taking precautions in case another government shutdown ensues.
HUD has informed us since they reopened, and they've set aside funds for us to be paid through April. So if they shut down in February, it's really not going to affect us, again, unless it is long-term beyond April.
Lawmakers have until Friday, February 15th to pass a deal to fund the government, and President Trump must sign it as well. For WRFL Radio, I'm Elle Smith.
Well, like we just heard, there is another deadline in place now. So, of course, with that comes a possibility of another shutdown. Dr. Voss, Trump has also made it clear he's not opposed to declaring a national state of emergency if he doesn't get approval of the deal that in terms of the congressional negotiations offer. How is Trump able to use that executive authority in this case to declare a state of emergency over a budget? And has that ever happened before?
It's not clear he could get away with declaring a state of emergency and starting to work on something like a wall without congressional approval. I mean, he's been willing multiple times to act as though he had executive authority to do things without congressional approval. But the success rate in the courts of those independent actions has not been so good. So I would expect if he tried to do that, there would immediately be a legal challenge and that he would be restrained from doing it while awaiting legal action. And I'm no expert on the law, but there's a good chance from what I'm reading that he would then lose that case.
Right. Okay. So regardless on if he could actually declare that state of emergency, if they don't meet that deadline by this Friday, would that automatically sort of trigger a new government shutdown? Another partial one?
Well, if they don't pass another continuing resolution, then sure, we could go back to another shutdown. Lately, the noises have been upbeat, but as we've seen with negotiations between Trump and the Democrats, it sounds as though they're nearing an agreement, and then either Trump or the Democratic leadership get unhappy, and then they say, no, it's going badly again. So, if they don't come up with the deal that it now sounds as though they might be able to stitch together, we could be looking at another government shutdown. And, you know, you had that one interview just now with the someone running one government office and how they've set things up to be able to ride this out. I mean, so many good people who work either in or with the federal government across the country have been adapting to this to keep, you know, the impact on Americans from being severe. And just as a side note, I mean, we really ought to be grateful to all those people.
Right. Definitely. And of course, with these more frequent government shutdowns in the last couple of years, that leads to more people having to adapt to these circumstances, especially in businesses like that. Obviously, no one knows what's going to happen. Like you just said, it is still up in the air. Sometimes it seems one way and then it falls another. But just based on your own experience and expertise, if you had to guess, which way are you leaning right now?
Well, I'm not real optimistic. I mean, the Democrats know that Trump fell in the polls, so they could, you know, look at that and say, okay, we need to keep fighting him. And they've made, you know, very clear promises to Democratic constituencies to resist his immigration, anti-immigration policies. Trump, meanwhile, notices that he just rode out a shutdown and his popularity is almost back to where it was before.
Right.
So he's probably thinking he can ride one out again. Mitch McConnell and the Republicans in the Senate aren't really going to step in and solve this, would be my guess, because without Trump on board, McConnell can't really do anything. I mean, you need a president to sign the budget. So I would not at all be surprised if we see another shutdown.
Right. Okay. Well, we heard earlier about those federal workers who have been affected and could potentially be affected in the future, but non-federal workers would also be impacted. Reporter Brett Alper reports on many of the departments that were closed during that first government shutdown.
When the government shut down on December 22nd of 2018, many departments of the government were forced to close. This includes national parks, Homeland Security, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the FDA, and many others. This means that all of the national parks in the country, including Kentucky's tourist attraction Mammoth Cave, would close. All of the national museums in Washington, D.C. also closed during the shutdown. The FDA also cut back on inspecting many of their high-risk foods, such as seafood, fruits, and vegetables. The FDA inspects food companies for bugs, rodents, mishandled foods, improper preparation, and other hazards. Many workers started to skip work, such as TSA and the IRS. According to TSA, there was a 7.6% of unscheduled absences on January 25th, compared to the 3% on the same day 1 year ago. This led to many delays at security checkpoints for people trying to travel. According to President of National Treasury Employees Union, Tony Reardon, hundreds of Internal Revenue Service workers were given permission to miss work, which could slow down the process of taxpayer refunds. With the government shutdown ending, these departments have reopened. However, if the government goes into another shutdown on February 15th, the country could be seeing these problems happening again. For WRFL Radio, I'm Brett Alper.
Well, like we just heard and like we've been discussing for the past half hour or so, a lot of people get affected, at least in the short term, by these shutdowns. But Dr. Voss, do you think that lower income individuals are unproportionately affected compared to maybe middle or upper class Americans?
Yes, lower income people, and also people who maybe make a little bit more money but don't have much by way of savings, right? While they eventually get paid, who's going to be hurt by a short-term, lack of a paycheck is somebody who's living day to day. So if they have, you know, loans from the private sector, from a bank or the like that they have to pay back, they may have trouble making those loans. If you have businesses that needed a loan in order to carry over their payroll, you know, private businesses, but relying on a government loan, they could be impacted. Other things equal, the less money you have and the less money you make, missing a paycheck is going to make a much bigger difference to you.
Yeah, you brought up an interesting point there about that crossover sort of between the public and the private sector. So if you had that private loan through a bank, but your income isn't coming in through that public government sector, is there any sort of crossover in terms of like the bank working with the government to understand like, okay, well, this person's not getting paid, so that loan's not getting paid this month? Or is it all completely separate and falling on that individual?
Yeah, so there was some talk of passing legislation to protect government workers during the shutdown. I don't know that anything ultimately passed before the continuing resolution. There certainly were stories of individual lenders and other, you know, people who knew that workers were going through a hard time where they tried to help them. I mean, there were some restaurants, for example, that gave a free meal to a federal worker if you could show you're a federal
John
worker.
John Calipari right here in Lexington started that.
Yeah, so there were those little efforts, nothing sort of large scale.
Nothing on that larger scale. Okay. Well, jumping back to the national level, of course, the shutdown, of course, has affected President Trump in some way or another, but how do you think it's affected in-house in terms of other Republicans, whether or not those Republicans are anti-Trump or pro-Trump or sort of falling somewhere in the middle? Has this shutdown sort of affected his perception within his own party? Obviously, of course, it's hurt him from the Democratic side, but from his own side of the aisle, what's that impact?
Well, no doubt there are individual members of Congress who are Republican and represent districts with a lot of government workers, and they would have heard a lot more about this than the typical Republican. But for the most part, a Republican in Congress, they're so utterly under the sway of the image of their party brand, and especially the popularity of their president, that as Trump rises and Trump falls, most of them, their sort of vulnerability, their political status rises and falls with him. And this is more true today than it's ever been. Some research in political science suggests that's because more and more we get our news not from local papers or local TV stations or local radio stations.
Right. I don't know why not.
Like this one. I don't either. But instead, we tend to get it through national internet things. So, overwhelmingly, our image of our local representative is based not on what our local representative does, but what the president's doing.
Right. Good point. Well, going back to that idea of another possible government shutdown, those two consecutively back-to-back shutdowns, do you think that would cause a greater impact? And would anything necessarily be different this time, or would the premise sort of be the same as the most recent one?
You know, the first shutdown already opened up, and another one would even further open up uncertainty. And really this I can't trust what's going to happen next has a whole lot of impact across the society that you can't just like sum up in a, you know, -1% economic growth this year or something like that.
Right.
Even though it probably will sort of work its way through the system and cause the economy to move more slowly and have all these indirect impacts. So uncertainty leads to different investor behavior, whether you're talking people who buy stocks or you're talking people who might expand a business, people who decide whether to add employees or not. We don't get to trace that to the shutdown. But that doesn't mean it's not there. It doesn't mean that person who's thinking of taking on a few more employees thinks, I better wait. I better see what's going to happen here. And the person they would have hired is not making money. They're not spending the money. But since they never had the job in the first place, we can't say, look, the shutdown cost them their job.
Right.
Yeah. So we miss a lot of that. But that uncertainty is very, very destructive. The thing I'll say, you know, I don't want to suggest that the current shutdown is the real villain here. You talked about the standard budgetary process. Congress and the president almost never succeed at following the correct budgetary process. They almost never get it right, whether it's one party, two parties dividing the government. And the way the feds are unable to follow a standard process and pass a budget creates uncertainty in our economy year after year after year.
Well, thank you so much for that input there and throughout the duration of the show. That's all the time we have. But Dr. Voss, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me again, Maggie.
Of course. Well, we hope the comments and the research presented here from our expert, as well as some of our background information, has helped to clarify what a government shutdown is, why they occur, and how the most recent government shutdown has affected those in this country. We'd like to thank our guests again, of course, Dr. Stephen Voss, for being here with us. And you can join us again next week at 5 o'clock as we'll talk about amateurism in collegiate sports. For WRFL Radio, I'm Maggie Davis.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.